All right, hey Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, along with Dargan Souther of the Des Moines Register. Dargan, we knew this would be our last game of the season either way. Obviously, an unfortunate finish for the Hawkeyes. 102-85 loss to the LSU Tigers. Before we get into officiating and taunting and stuff like that, let's just sort of discuss where this game was settled on, in terms of the gameplay. LSU's hot shooting, I think, was something Iowa, couldn't have, just didn't want, and it just happened. I mean, they were 11-17 from three, 9-12 from three in the first half. Really just caught fire in the second quarter, and Iowa couldn't recover.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare, I guess, that you see a game kind of decided in the first half fully. But you look at the second half and the scoring was even. So, it was a combination of things. It was players putting up numbers that were not characteristic of what they had done recently. It was a combination of Iowa leaving shooters way too open on several attempts. And then, once you kind of get in that hole, it's really hard to climb out of. And, Iowa made a push certainly to make it a game again down 21. But that's the thing that's so tough about when you fall into a hole that big is you really need two pushes. You need the push to get back in the game, and then you need the push to, get over the top. And so that second push never really came, despite, a great effort by everybody in black and gold. And so, again, it's going to be, it's an unfortunate ending, but, I think regardless of what happened today, this season has been, transcendent for the sport, but I think also transcendent for now what Iowa women's basketball's place in the sport is. I think this has given them way more respect than, they ever could have imagined gaining in, a month, really. And, I really think it sets the tone for next season that Caitlin Clark's coming back. Monica Sinano, McKenna Warnock are gone, but the core of this team is coming back. And when you get this close to the top and you fall short, it's really hard to settle for anything else. And so, it was a tough game on a lot of fronts for Iowa, but I really don't think it diminishes at all how powerful this season has been in changing a lot of things.
There we go. Unmute, key factor in podcasting. No question. I mean, we talked about the TV ratings. Those of you that wondered what happened with the Iowa South Carolina game, it was 5.5 million viewers on ESPN, which was the most watched college basketball game on that network since 2008, men or women. That includes the title games for the women, NCAA tournament games for women, major games for men. That's 15 years. That's a pretty significant thing that happened here on Friday night. And the Hawkeyes won that game, and they got to the national title game. They'd never been to one before. And then this place was just this place was really revved up. It was a really great atmosphere. LSU fans, too. I mean, it was Iowa fans and LSU fans that really, I mean, more Iowa fans for sure. But, LSU fans have a lot more to cheer about, especially in that second quarter. You made some good points there on the, leaving shooters open. I think that was, you still don't expect them to hit that many. It goes back to what Caitlin Clark said multiple times, including I think back in Seattle. It's like you got to have things to fall your way. You got to be hot like almost every night.
Yeah, I mean it's so we got some maintenance guys up here. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously a player in Jasmine Carson who didn't score in the last three NCAA tournament games has 21 points in the first half. Like that's, credit to her, obviously, and everybody on Iowa's side gave LSU all the credit that they deserved, and they deserved a lot of it. But something like that is just, it's just kind of how March goes. I guess we're in April now, but it's kind of how it goes in the postseason. You know, you hope you're on the right side of those breaks and not the wrong side. And, you know, unfortunately for Iowa, that was a big part of the game, you know. And, you know, if I was in a position where, you know, they need stop after stop after stop, that can be hard for them sometimes to do. And again, you know, there were certainly some unfortunate things that happened for Iowa. But I still think, you know, as we'll get into, you know, I still think for all that is being talked about right now, I think the more dominant team certainly won today's game.
Hey, sorry, I had to check a fact there. Anyway, what I was finishing saying is, like, they just ran into a hot team, and so that was the biggest story of the game, obviously. But you know, no question, foul trouble was the other one, and you know, to me, like, let's look at Caitlin Clark's second, third, and fourth fouls. Okay, the two charging calls to me were not good calls, especially the second charging call, which again, officiating awareness has to be just part of a champion being a championship game ref, right? I mean, to me, it's like, are you going to call? I mean, it was really just it was essentially a flop. You know, the girl for LSU, number 13, I think it was.
Yeah, I believe so.
I can't remember. It was my mind scattered. I just finished my column. It was number 13. She was mainly in the game to try to draw a charge, and she did. And so Caitlin has three fouls by the 3:06 mark of the second quarter, and Iowa was down, I believe, 10 at that point, and then they ended up going down 17 by halftime with her on the bench. Obviously, it's not going to go well when she's not on the court. We've seen that most of the season. You need Caitlin Clark on the court. You need her playing 40 minutes. That's not a flaw of this team. That's just what this team is. They've got the best player in the country, and they revolve everything around her. So that was a factor. So I guess I do have a problem with how those charges were officiated, especially because in the same quarter, Kim Mulkey, you know, ran into an official while she was on the court, and nothing was called. So, I mean, that did not sit well, I don't think, with Hawkeye fans, and it really should. I mean, again, it's like you make one judgment call this way and another judgment call another way, and it impacted the game considerably.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Kim Mulkey deserved a technical foul at some point in this game. Again, you know, you work the refs and you hope that it pays off, and it certainly did in this point, because as you mentioned, both of those charging calls came right after Kim Mulkey made a point to address it to the refs that they needed to watch that. And, you know, that's kind of what you know, when you see players or coaches go to the officials and you know, it's obviously some of it is about the call. But especially at that point in the game, it's trying to get the next call. And that was certainly what happened in that case. And, you know, overall, I think the officiating deserves a lot of criticism for not matching the moment. You know, 37 foul calls, even though it was split even or pretty even, 18 and 19. I just think that there needed to be a little more reading the room on what this moment was and how impactful it was from a sports standpoint, from really every standpoint that you know, we've talked so much this month about how the game has grown and how it's evolving and all that's all the positivity, and you to kind of overshadow all that with officiating that. You know, it was bad all around. Like it was just bad. You know, Angel Reese obviously gets two first quarter fouls and she's out for the entire second quarter. So that's the both stars on both teams dealing with foul trouble. And certainly if you follow Caitlin Clark this year, as everybody I'm sure on this has, she hasn't really dealt with foul trouble all that much. You know, that's not been something that she's really had to overcome before. So again, you know, I guess I'm a little hesitant to go all in on the officiating because I don't think that it made a difference in the outcome. I don't think it made it like I, you know, if it was a little bit of a closer game, then I could really understand the negativity and the complaining. And, you know, I think it gives it a lot more legitimacy. But I'm a little hesitant to say that it kind of changed, it would have altered the outcome, but it certainly stifled Iowa from, you know, completing the comeback that they were trying to execute there in the second half and toward the end of the second quarter as well.
Right. I mean, I think I'm in total agreement with your point there that it was a poor read of the room with everything that was happening in women's basketball right now. I mean, so much audience out there, and you know, to make questionable judgment calls in that way, I think that's where it was disappointing for sure. And then, I mean, to kind of further a few things we talked about, like it was, so I sat right at midcourt. So right where the officials like talk to like the, you know, the bench officials and stuff. So I could hear all the interactions and stuff like that. So like, I could not believe it when they said technical foul on 22, but the Mulkey, like, I don't know if they showed it on TV or not, but you could, I mean, Mulkey, I was sitting really close to her and she was, so I could hear what she was saying at the officials, and it was about the Clark push-offs, and like right away, second one, and then later was the Phantom third one. And then same with, and Bluter was, you were closer to Bluter than I was, but she was constantly pointing at Mulkey on the court, and officials, she did on the record complain afterwards that they would not have a conversation with her. So
yeah, that part was certainly legitimate. You know, Bluter was spent a lot of time, because again, you know, you saw it work for Mulkey. You know, she made a concerted effort to say, hey, watch Caitlin Clark on this. And it was clear that the referees were influenced by that, you know, kind of pushed that way from Mulkey. And it was legitimate. You know, Bluter tried to, you know, there were some travel calls that she thought had happened right in front of the Iowa bench that they were not very happy about. But rarely was there ever a moment where, you know, she could have the influence on the game that Mulkey did indicating that Caitlin was pushing off there. So that part I can confirm was certainly legitimate that, you know, they didn't really give her the time of day on discussing a lot of things during the game.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of like, I mean, Mulkey's kind of a little bit, you know, known for, you know, it's almost like a Tom Izzo situation, you know, just kind of known for working the refs, and Bluter just, you know, is kind of, you know, nice lady. And I don't think gets that same, I guess, fear or respect from officials. At least that's how it played out today. All right, let's move forward now to the technical foul on the Hawkeyes. So Iowa had cut it, as we mentioned, from 63-42. They got it all the way down to 7. So they got it down to, 71-64, I believe. 71-64.
Yep.
So great push. I mean, they got everybody involved. Let's give credit to Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall. Both hit big threes in that stretch. Of course, Caitlin was phenomenal. That's almost the unfortunate part, too, is like she had an amazing game. I mean, 8 three-pointers in an NCAA championship game, 30 points, 8 assists, finishes with 71 points in the final four. I voted for her for outstanding player. Angel Reese got it, but I thought there was no doubt who the most outstanding player was in the final four. But that aside, like she gets so the Hawkeyes are coming. They're charging. And then it becomes 73-64, and then that's when you get simultaneous fourth foul on Monica Sonano and Caitlin Clark with 104 to go or 106 to go in the third quarter. Before I talk about the tech, why don't you walk through how you felt about what was issued a technical foul on Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, I mean, that the push was pretty incredible, and you felt like, you know, because I think there was 4 threes in that run and from 3 different players. And you really felt like, you know, Iowa, again, they needed another push, and I think the Tech really prevented them from getting that chance to get that next push. But, you know, the first half of the third quarter was very impressive because, again, you're down 17 at halftime in the title game. It can be easy to kind of, you know, say, hey, this is getting out of hand. But Iowa was brilliant there to start the third. And, you know, the technical, I think, is I guess I would it, unfortunate is certainly a word, just because, you know, Caitlin has, and I know you wrote about this and Lisa Bluder talked about this a lot. Caitlin Clark has definitely made a concerted effort to tame some of the on-court antics that maybe went a little too far earlier in her career. And so because, you know, the first thing that I heard Caitlin say as she was walking to the bench after technicals, she was talking to the coaches. She said, "I didn't say anything." And so, you know, I think that shows in that moment that, you know, she's really made an effort to understand that, you know, you can work the refs and you can do that, but you know, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to work all the time. And so I think that's probably what stings the most if you're an Iowa fan, is it wasn't Caitlin Clark talking. It wasn't her chirping back. It wasn't her complaining to the refs. It was just, you know, the highlight is kind of doesn't really give a lot of legitimacy to the technical, because, you know, she kind of just flips the ball away and isn't even really like paying attention to the ref. She's just kind of walking back to the huddle. So I don't know. Yeah, it was an unfortunate stretch there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that, so the official explanation was from the pool reporter who talked to the referee was that it was a second delay of game violation on the Hawkeyes because they earlier had one for touching the basketball, you know, out of, after a basket or whatever. You know, by the rule that they actually cited, it talked about you cannot do that and impact, you know, with an attempt to gain advantage. So like the letter of the law is like you have to pick up the ball after a whistle and throw it to the official so as not to gain a team advantage. But the problem that, you know, understandably a lot of people are wondering about is like, what advantage did Iowa gain? It was a dead ball and they were looking at the Sonano foul, right? So it just didn't seem to warrant even that. Yeah, it's just a matter of judgment. Like in that moment, even if like you could technically like say by the letter of the law that is what the officials should do in that case. There was like heads of officiating, you know, former men's heads of officials just blasting them for calling that in that moment, just because of that, you know, the stakes and you have to like. Like, imagine if, like, you did that to, like, Steph Curry or something and gave him his fifth foul in, like, the third quarter of a NBA Finals Game 7. I mean, it just doesn't happen normally in that kind of situation. So, as you said, unfortunate. And it just kind of summed up the day for Iowa. It just was not Iowa's day.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to reading the room because, you know, it's one thing to call that against Dartmouth in mid-December when – you know, there's only so much on the line, but to have to dig that technical into the rule in a national championship game when Iowa is trying to get back in the game, I think it's more evidence that the officiating didn't match the moment. And again, you know, I think across the sport, you know, pretty objectively, the officiating in women's basketball is lagging behind in matching how much the game is advanced, and that's kind of how the question was phrased to Lisa Bluder. You know, what needs to change in terms of getting the officiating up to speed? And so, you know, I think this is just kind of more, it seems like there's a lot of examples of this where you know, the reading the room is not something that's being executed and is not something that is being done in the right way, to where, again, that's a tough call in any spot, but it's especially tough call to get in a national championship game where, and again, you know, some will say, oh, okay, well, why are you officiating it differently? But, you know, it's, if it's even debatable, I don't really think that, that you can issue it there.
Yeah. And then you get to the taunts, lastly, you know, by Angel Reese. And, I guess I, you know, again, we don't need to spend much time on it, but, you know, Caitlin didn't do that to Haley Van Lith, like in her face and, you know, anything like that. It was just more of like a, you know, more motioning to the crowd. Right. So and it was just like a one-time thing. It was kind of like a funny John Cena moment. And, you know, but it's definitely, this one definitely was purposeful. And apparently, can you speak to this more? There was some disrespect stuff being thrown around that basically the way, am I accurate in saying that LSU didn't like how Iowa was disrespectful to South Carolina's outside shooters? Is that kind of what where the disrespect came from?
Honestly, that was the most baffling kind of element of the buildup was, I think, you know, Alex Morris got asked about it on the podium and she tried to clarify herself that she was saying if she was in South Carolina's shoes, she would feel disrespected if they were guarding her that way. Now, the point that is conveniently being leaved out on that is Iowa's plan worked. They beat South Carolina. So I don't see how you can sit there and say that. And one, I don't know why a player would get motivated by how their opponent was defending another team. I mean, it was very clear that the way that Iowa defended South Carolina was a one-off game plan that was built, that was constructed specifically for South Carolina. You know, Iowa's not really played defense like that at any point during this year. So, you know, again, everybody kind of finds their own ways to get motivated, but that was a very strange, that was a very strange storyline that, you know, and again, you know, like if South Carolina had hit a bunch of threes and Iowa's defensive game plan had just totally backfired, then maybe that comment makes a tad more sense because you're saying, okay, they felt but again, it would be South Carolina saying that they were disrespected and responded that way. So for another team to look at that situation that way, that was very strange. But again, you know, everybody finds their own motivation, you know, anyway. And clearly, I guess that worked for LSU. You know, they seemed to take a lot. They were very made it a point to not have their shooting night go like South Carolina's did. And so, but again, I mean, it was a puzzling situation for sure.
Yeah, let's just leave it at that. You know, to me, I just, you know, just like to say, you know, I think I thought Caitlin's post game interviews were beyond impressive in terms of class, absolute top notch. Basically, just said she just wanted to get to the handshake line and be grateful for the moment, and you know, just I've never seen her cry in that way before after you know, publicly, and I just thought it was really impactful, and it was and what she cried about in the post game was, you know, kind of understanding the impact that this team had on young girls and fans in the state of Iowa, her home state, you know, that she saw this team bringing so much joy, and that's when she got choked up, and that's kind of what I wrote at the end of my column. I hope you guys check it out at Hawk Central. That to me was like mostly that was like my lasting image of the season was seeing her cry, kind of almost overwhelmed by the impact that she and her team had, and then Monica has her hand on her back, rubbing her back like while she's crying, you know, which also exemplifies the team support, you know, that the Hawkeyes share, and you can see that, you know, every single game they play, that's just how they play and how they're wired. I thought that was kind of the moment that stuck with me out of this game more so than the other stuff. Obviously, you have to write about the other stuff, but I kind of just wanted to make that point that she's been fantastic with everything. And she, you know, everything was going against her, and she really could have melted down in some weird way. you know, like old Caitlin maybe would have or something, but she was professional beyond belief. And really, you know, I think won even more fans today with how she reacted to it all.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously it's very rare that we get to see Caitlin Clark handling, you know, I don't want to call it negativity, but like things not going her way. Obviously the bulk of her time down here in this month has been all positive and all praise, and deservedly so. Obviously it's not misplaced there, but it was interesting because, you know, you and I kind of chatted just a tad before the press conference, you know, wondering how she would react. And again, if she had gone off on the officiating and said that it was, you know, really changed the game and affected the outcome, then, you know, she's not necessarily wrong in saying that, but it's clearly not her style to do that. And I think that's, you know, everybody, you know, loves to see how you react in amid positivity, but how you react when things don't go your way, I think is even more telling. And that's really been the biggest thing that's been pinpointed with what Caitlin Clark's growth has been, is her mental fortitude, her ability to handle adversity. And yeah, you know, it was a little jarring to see her that emotional, because she's kind of, you know, she wasn't like that after they lost to Creighton last year, which was obviously a very tough situation. So, again, you know, I think Iowa has done a good job of living in the moment throughout this whole run. And I feel like in that moment when it was over is when it kind of all hit her that, you know, this has been a big deal. Not that she hasn't known that, but it just seemed like now that it's over and in that first moment of reflection is when kind of everything hit that, you know, even though we lost, we really did something special and will continue to do something special in her eyes as she comes back next year. And, you know, again, it's interesting to contrast last year and this year going into the following years, because last year you had a very crushing loss serving as the motivating factor throughout the whole season. This year also ended on a loss, but really it's this whole run that I feel like is, you know, and coming up a game short is really going to make a huge difference in how Iowa handles next season, where, you know, there's going to be even more pressure, there's going to be even more attention, an even bigger spotlight that they've deservedly earned. But I really think that this whole run has, you know, maybe you don't think about it in the moment because you're just going from game to game, but I think this whole run has really prepared the core that is coming back for next season to chase something that maybe they didn't think that they could do. You know, I think now, you again, you know, I mentioned it earlier, you get this close to the top, it's hard to really settle for anything other than, you know, getting right back here and changing the outcome. And so obviously that's very tough to do. But, you know, I think it's going to be a very big motivating factor for Caitlin and the rest of the girls coming back that they were this close and, you know, couldn't quite grasp it. But now, you know, let's see what we can do when we roll the ball out again.
Yeah. I mean, Clark ends up with a tournament record for scoring, tournament record for assists, set a championship game record for threes, finished fourth in Division I history for points in a season, fourth in Division I history for assists in a season, and third in three-pointers in a season. I mean, just unbelievable season for her. Let's go to three-word headlines just because I forgot after the last one. So Amy the Jello Shot Queen says, the ref show. Mark Davis, refs were paid. Randy Kopecky, LSU sizzled Nets. Good. Darren Johnston, lost with class. Thought that was a good one. Barbara Clark, I don't know if that's any relation to Caitlin, said good sportsmanship matters.
I like this one from Iowa Mama Hawk, high road taken. I think that was certainly the case from Iowa on a lot of fronts after the game.
Yeah. Chad Carter, great year Hawkeyes.
Let's see. I'm trying to find some non-officiating ones because that's like what 99.9% of them are.
Okay, so here's Blake Jones had a good one here. Class versus SaaS, and also bar's been raised. I like that.
I really, that's probably the best one right there because I think that, you know, obviously this run has done tremendous things for the game as a whole, but I think really, you know, kind of on a more micro level, I think really this has changed the how Iowa women's basketball and how Big Ten basketball is viewed from a national perspective. You know, there were very few who thought, you know, a Big Ten team, you know, could crack that upper echelon. Iowa did it. They did it by toppling the best team in the country all season. And so, you know, again, I'm not saying that, you know, they should be in the Final Four every year and in the national championship game every year. That's, you know, probably a little unrealistic, but at the same time, I think that when people see Iowa women's basketball, there's a different level of prestige that now exists with this program that didn't before. And really the only way you do that is by going on a run like this. And it certainly helps when, you know, there was a lot of people who didn't expect it to happen this way. And so I think inevitably the bar has been raised significantly. And I think we're going to see that in a lot of different ways next season. You know, you talked about how, you know, is Iowa going to sell out every home game? I think that's very, very realistic. And so, you know, how many times are they on national TV? You know, they're on national TV a lot this year. I think we'll see even more next year. I think all around it's just, you know, it's a different feel when you hear Iowa women's basketball. And again, there's been a lot of bar raising in the last 5 years, going back to Megan Gustafson. But this, I think this really is a monumental moment in the program as far as what the expectations are and how they've been altered within the program.
Well, as you can hear, probably they're just really tearing things down here. So we're going to wrap up here, but we just want to say thank you for following along. I think our lives are also changed by this team because I think the appetite for women's basketball coverage is insatiable. And I think that will affect our coverage going forward. I mean, I'm not talking to editors yet about it, but I would imagine the focus that we have on women's basketball next year will be more than we've ever done before. Would be my guess. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And just off season stuff, like, you know, not that we don't, right. We always have written about the women in the off season, but, you know, I think every little move they make is really going to be, you know, scrutinized, appreciated, whatever. You know, if they bring someone in the portal, I mean, it's just, you're talking about like, oh, is this the piece that can get into the Final Four again, or, you know, that kind of thing. And Lisa Bluter did say, you know, hey, we've got some spots. I mean, watch my video that I posted of her at Hawk Central. She kind of sending out the invitation. So, you know, I think if this team can get a big to go with Stolke inside, and then maybe a wing guard that can play some good defense, and kind of maybe Martin can even move up to that four spot potentially. You know, and you get another 3-point shooter in that three spot, or just rotate Marshall, Gabby, you know, Marshall Martin and third person fill in here. Not saying a Fulter or Fuhrbach can't be that person, but those are the kind of pieces I would be looking for if they can get maybe, you know, a player or two in the portal here before next season.
But you know, along with that, you know, maybe the conversation a month ago was Iowa needs to add a big to stay competitive in the Big Ten, or Iowa needs to add a big to, you know, be one of the top teams in the Midwest. Now I think it's they need to add a big because they're trying to get back to the Final Four and they're trying to win, you know, a national title. I don't think that sounds, you know, again, whether it happens or not, I think that's how changes happen. As you go on runs like these, and it really alters you know, the whole expectation of the program. And so, yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason. But I think one thing that has to happen in addition to the portal is there's got to be some elevation that's already on the roster. You know, you have, you know, I guess the depth of this team didn't exactly materialize maybe the way that it was thought it was going to. Now, it didn't make, I mean, obviously it didn't make that much of a difference, I don't think, but I think you need to, you know, Addison O'Grady, her confidence has to be restored after playing a role in this tournament. You know, maybe that's someone who can regain the momentum that she had her freshman year. So again, it's going to be an interesting offseason, and I think all the news and notes that happen have a different value now than they did before this run.
Awesome, good stuff, Dargan Southard. Thank you everyone for following us out there for this whole run. We covered all the games, the maximum number of games.
Minneapolis, back to Iowa City, Seattle, Dallas. My car's been at the airport, the Cedar Rapids Airport, since March 22nd. Hopefully it's not towed. But yeah, it's been a – March is hectic, but March is fun. We even got into April this time. So, yeah, it's been a blast these last few weeks for sure.
Yeah. Thanks again, Dargan. And we're going to head out. We're going to close down signing off on this podcast and this women's basketball season. But obviously – plenty of coverage and whatnot to come at HawkCentral.com. Thanks for joining us. Chad Lysico, Dargan Southard. So long.